Hi, and welcome back to another one of my 78 RPM podcasts. This is mid-January, and I've been working on my annual income tax returns, as I have to every year at this time. And so I thought I'd play a related song. This is from Jack Harris and his orchestra. Now, to be perfectly frank, I know nothing about Jack Harris and his orchestra, but it was one of the many British dance bands that had sprung up in the 20s to sort of imitate what was going on in America at the same time. They don't sound exactly the same, and in general, there are fewer jazz soloists around, I suppose, and they're more designed for strict tempo ballroom dancing. A lot of these dance bands were hired by various big hotels to play nightly in their ballrooms. So their stock in trade was a mixture of standards from America and sometimes some British songs, and quite often these songs had accompanying lyrics which were slightly novelty in their approach. They thought of everything they could. In this case, they decided to link the concept of love with that of income tax, which is why I'm playing it. This was recorded in London in October 1931. It's the Jack Harris Band, featuring a vocalist of whom I've never heard, called Harry Bentley. In fact, there's nobody in the band that I actually recognise. Nevertheless, that's the singer. This is the Jack Harris Dance Band, and it's as good as any other dance band of the time, I suppose. And the name of the song is If They Ever Had an Income Tax on Love.
It would break my heart if they ever start an income tax on love. When you want to squeeze beneath the trees with some sweet turtle dove, would be just too bad if they ever had an income tax on love. Mr. Cupid would count your kisses and every little thrill. He'd inspect them, and when he'd check them, he'd send you in the bill. Take a night in June when Mr. Moon is winking up above. He would hide his face if they ever place an income tax on love.
Jack Harris, and I see from my discography here that amongst the places in which he played, you could have heard him at the Embassy Club, at the Grosvenor House, Park Lane, or indeed Ciro's. So this was obviously a band that played in various places rather than being stuck in one venue all the time. which may be the reason why perhaps the band didn't last, because they didn't have that security of tenure. I don't really know, to be honest. Now, around the same time as this, a completely different sort of music was being recorded, not in London, but in Vienna. When this podcast goes out, it should be the 1st of February, which means that the day before will have been my birthday, which I'm delighted to say I share with another songwriter who wore glasses, but who was born 150 years before me and at my age had been dead for 35 years. Happily, I don't suffer from syphilis. And his name was Franz Schubert. Now, recently on the radio here in Great Britain, an English tenor has been giving a talk about the Winterreise, a song cycle written by Schubert. And as usual, I'm afraid far too much fuss was made over the words and not enough on the phrasing of the music. And the result is it always sounds rather precious. You've probably seen these Schubert singers coming on stage with a little book, and it's all terribly serious. And I just don't think that Schubert was that sort of person. I think that he wrote his songs to sing at the local equivalent of pub or coffee house or whatever they had in those days. And he'd go down there with a mate who would sing, and that was it. So I think the person who sings Schubert the best in general was the great tenor Richard Tauber. Not only did he come from Vienna like Schubert, so he doesn't have to spend hours getting his German just right because he already had it just right. The words are quite clear, but he has time to think about how he phrases the music. And he sings it like a song, not some sort of jewel that has to be polished. I think this is the way that Schubert would have liked to have heard his songs. In this case, though, not accompanied with the usual piano, but by a whole orchestra. This is called Hark, Hark, the Lark, or Hoch, Hoch, die Lerche, and this was recorded in Vienna in 1934, a short time before the great tenor decided to move to London, and wisely so, because he was half Jewish and he would have fallen foul of the Nazis who were about to invade his country. So here you are, Richard Tauber, at the height of his fame and powers, singing, as nobody else really has sung, a beautiful song of Schubert's. Here it is. Richard Tauber. By the way, going back to the first track, I may have implied that the song that was being performed by Jack Harris and his band was a British song. It wasn't. It was an American song, just to make that clear. Anyhow, onwards and sideways. If I didn't know anything about the Jack Harris Orchestra, I know just as little about the next artist, but I'm really impressed with her, particularly because this is recorded in 1915. It's a comic song, and it sounds almost as if it were performed yesterday. Really modern style she had. This American performer was called Irene Franklin. It turns out that she was born in New York in 1876 and died in New Jersey in 1941. Her career was a mixed one of being part actress and part a vaudeville performer, which is what she is here. Her accompanying pianist was for a long time Burton Green, known as Bert, whom she married, but who also died very young. His health broke down during World War I when they were performing for the troops, and he never really recovered, and he died in 1922. She married again somebody called Jerry Jernigan, and she outlived him too, dying, as I say, in the end at the age of 65. She is described in one book as a vivacious red-headed comedian and a mimic, and she performed on something called the Keith Albee Circuit, about which I have to admit I know nothing. And that would have been even before this, around 1909, 1910. Anyhow, we take you back to this acoustic recording, a comic song with a lyric about some chap she knows who does everything wrong. And as I say, the style is, I think, incredibly modern for its time. Let's see if you agree. Here is, then, Irene Franklin performing All Wrong, subtitled The Wail of a Chorus Lady.
Hey, listen. There's a male ange in you who wears two great socks and thinks I'm the whole camembert. His heart is all right, but his feet are a sight. Honest, I think he knits all his own underwear. But there's something about him that interests me. It's a role that has choked up a ring. And as long as he has it, I'll stick to my claws. That's his name, and he looks it, poor yink. He wears bright green hats with an awning like that. All wrong. All wrong. If he gargles two beers, he thinks he's on a bat. All wrong. You know one of them guys. Just wrong. I asked him one day to take me out for a drive. He said he had a new car, a Woolworth 5. You know, that guy meant a trolley, and he's still alive. All wrong. All wrong. He startled our doorbell last Sunday at about 10, when the family was all in the hay. He said he was off to the beach with a friend. Would I bring one? Oh, we'd have a wild day. Well, I slapped the complexion on, 2 inches thick, not forgetting the back of the neck. My sisters were sleeping, so I swiped all their clothes and dashed out all fussed up like a wreck. Claude said, we'll have lunch at a swell Broadway cake. Oh, wrong. Gee, his grammar's something fierce. But we go there, and he starts dropping change into a kind of a safe. All wrong. I said, what kind of a place is this? Then he yells, grab your grub, kid. Don't let it get by. And a large, juicy custard lands right in my eye. My God, I was in the automat. Can you beat that guy? All wrong.
Irene Franklin, and just to add to the impressiveness of that recording, Irene Franklin wrote the lyrics and her husband wrote the music. 1915, it sounds as if it were written at least 20 years later. Talking of 20 years later, that's when the next artist came to her fame, I suppose. One of those big stars in her own time who somehow now has faded from public memory. I don't know why, but somehow we don't talk about her. She was born in 1916 and died in 1994. And she was born with the name Frances Rose Shore, S-H-O-R-E. At the age of 2, she didn't start very well. She had polio at a time when there was no treatment for it, and it left her with a slightly deformed foot, but not enough to stop her doing anything. She even wanted to be a torch singer at the tender age of 14, and would have done so were it not for the fact that her parents found out, turned up, and stopped her career there and then. Instead, she went to university, took a degree in sociology, and only then really started pushing to get her showbiz career off the ground. However, she failed singing auditions for Benny Goodman and Jimmy Dorsey and Tommy Dorsey, so she did what was unusual in those days and tried to make it on her own, not as a band singer. She had one of those voices which people say is velvet, and it wasn't long before she found success. During one of her early radio appearances, the disc jockey couldn't remember her name, but since she was singing the famous song Dinah, he referred to her as that Dinah girl. And that's how Frances Rose became Dinah Shore, and that stayed her stage name for the rest of her career, which included, right into the 70s, being the star of various TV shows, including chat shows, comedy shows, variety shows, you name it, she had it, and she was a huge star. And yet, as I say, people don't seem to talk about her anymore. She wasn't really a jazz singer, and I think she was at her best singing ballads, and that's what I'm going to give you now. I could have chosen various of her recordings. There's one very good one of Deep Purple, but this one she recorded just after World War II, I believe. It's a great song by Jerome Kern. Well, it would be written by him, and it's called They Didn't Believe Me. Well now, from Dinah Shore, let's go back to one of the great Schubert singers. I gave you a tenor before, but a tenor with a rich, deep baritonal sound, the great Richard Tauber. But now I'm going to play you a German baritone, who was also a great singer of Schubert Lieder, again, because he's not too precious about it. He just sings the song. Schubert wrote it right. You don't have to mess about with it or accentuate the words. Just sing the song, as I say. Well, I've played you one track of Heinrich Schlusnus before. He possibly had his reputation spoiled because he lived in Germany during the whole of the Nazi period, and he was famous during that time. But of course he sang much earlier, and he went on singing right to the end of his life. He was born in 1888, and he died in 1952. The track I've given you before was of him doing a great operatic aria, but he was just as preeminent, as I say, as a Lieder singer. So now I'm going to give you one of his recordings of Schubert, and this is the very famous Silvia, and he this time is just singing with a pianist. Wonderful sounding voice. He was better than all the other German baritones of his time, Herbert Janssen, Willy Domgraf, Fassbinder, Gerhard Hüsch, all the others. He was just the best, and indeed in the league of people like Tito Ruffo and people of that quality. So let's listen to the great Heinrich Schlusnus with his Lieder hat on, singing some Schubert, born, as I say, 150 years to the day before my birthday. That's Schubert, of course, not Schlusnus. And without more ado, here it is. The great Heinrich Schlusnus recorded in 1928 when he would have been, about 40, I suppose, and at the height of his vocal powers. The same year, a very different singing group was started in Germany. In those days, in those pre-Nazi days, there was a very big fascination with American music and jazz in particular. And of course, jazz meant in those days anything that was called American popular music. There's another great tradition in America of close harmony groups. We have now the modern jazz harmony groups, and way back when there were the barbershop quartets, which I love listening to. In between, there was a sort of halfway house of early jazz era close harmony groups, such as one lot called the Revelers. And this group was particularly attractive to some young Germans who were listening to this stuff on records in the 20s. As a result of this, an unemployed actor called Harry Frommermann decided he'd like to start up a sort of cabaret close harmony group, and he started running auditions in his flat in the Stubenrauchstrasse in Berlin. And once the group had been chosen and put together, it had a special attractive sound. None of the singers in this group maybe could have made it on their own. They weren't great singers, but somehow their voices blended in a way, and there was a certain sort of feel that wasn't the same as American close harmony groups. It was very much European. And their repertoire ranged from wonderful arrangements of folk songs from Germany and classical songs to American songs, and indeed witty popular songs of the day in the German style written by local songwriters. They very soon became very, very popular, and they carried this on for the next 4 or 5 years, made records and so forth, until the Nazis came in. You see, the problem was that half of this group were Jewish, and one of them had married a Jewish woman. This, of course, did not go along with Nazi ideology. Not only that, the name of the group was the Comedian Harmonists. This was an English name, and Hitler wanted everything to be German. The lineup of the band was Ari Lechnikov, Erich Collin, Harry Frommermann, the founder, Roman Sikorski, Robert Biberti, and Erwin Butz, who was the pianist who accompanied them all the time. Very soon, indeed by March 1934, they decided that they better leave Germany, and they sailed to America on the SS Europa and gave several concerts. However, they were scared that they might be interned if they stayed abroad, and eventually returned home. But Frommermann, Sikorski, and Collin had to flee Germany, being Jewish, and they started a new group in America, sometimes called the Comedian Harmonists, sometimes the Comedy Harmonists, with a new pianist, bass, and high tenor. Likewise, in Germany, the remaining original members replaced their counterparts in a group named Das Meistersextett, because by this time the Nazis forbade any English language names. Neither group, however, was able to attain the success. The German group was messed up by politics and censorship, not to mention the fact that some of them began to be called up to be in the army. Meanwhile, in America, there was increasing hostility to any German entertainers, whether they were Jewish or not. And of course, they couldn't return home anymore, nor could they go back to Austria, where they'd enjoyed lots of success. In 1936, Lechnikov did manage to get back to his fatherland, which was actually Bulgaria, but by 1941 both groups had broken up, and that was the end of it. They all survived World War II, but they were a forgotten group until in the 1970s a man called Eberhard Fechner made a 4-hour TV documentary all about the Comedian Harmonists, interviewing all the surviving members. Most of them were still alive back then, and the documentary aired over 2 nights in Germany in 1977, and all of a sudden there were news once more. Their old 78s were issued on LPs, and to this day, the Comedian Harmonists in Germany in particular are a very popular group. Indeed, there are now contemporary young men imitating the originals. Not quite as special, maybe, but they keep the tradition going. Well, I'm going to give you one of the recordings of one of the American popular songs that they covered, and it doesn't sound like anything that either American or British groups would have done with it. They've got a very, very recognizable sound, instantly recognizable, and very appealing. So, here is the Comedian Harmonists version of Whispering, and I hope that you'll enjoy it as much as I do. Thank you.
that's why you'll never lose. Whistling, that's why you'll never keep. Whistle and say that you believe in me. Whistle that I love of you.
All 78 recordings are like a window into the past, but that recording, to me at any rate, really seems like a window into a forgotten world, long before the Nazis came to power. Well, now we've come to the end of another podcast, except for my own track. One of my favourite sorts of music is bossa nova, but there are hardly any 78s made of that sort of music. However, I can play you a bossa nova as my track. I write them myself. This is one I wrote myself called Never. May I just remind any of you, in case you're listening to this podcast for the first time, that you can request tracks that you might have heard and I might have in my collection, which is pretty big, so I might have it. My email is spats47@ntlworld.com. You can also post corrections to anything I've said, because I'm not perfect, I make mistakes. And please, of course, share the link to my podcast, either the exact URL, or just tell people to go to Erlokin's Gramophone Show. Either one will work. There are over 70 programs up here now. None of them get taken down. So if you enjoy one, you can listen or indeed download any of these podcasts and, I don't know, put it on a CD, play it in your car when you're on a long drive. Whatever you want to do with it, they're free and they are out of copyright, so there's no problem. Well, without more ado then, this is my song, Never. I wrote it myself, I arranged it, and here it is. I hope you'll enjoy it. Until, therefore, the next time, au revoir.
Never may your eyes be weeping. Never may your spirits fall. Love is just a ball of twine. Love should join your heart to mine, and we will spin a thread of gold. Still shining when our love is old. Never may your nights be lonely. Never more drink bitter wine. Love is reaching out your hand. In my eyes you'll understand. Through all our days, may your eyes gaze into mine. Never may your nights be lonely. Never more drink bitter wine. Love is reaching out your hand. In my eyes, you'll understand. Through all our days,